Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Midland Reporter-Telegram, Inside Pages, Thursday, August 25th. Crime in brief. MPD sergeant charged with DWI in Tom Green County. A Midland Police Department sergeant has been placed on administrative suspension after being arrested for drunken driving, according to a City of Midland spokesperson. MPD Sergeant Gage Smith was arrested Tuesday in Tom Green County and charged with driving while intoxicated. Smith will be on an administrative suspension with the City of Midland pending further investigation, according to the press release. ECISD police charged 7th grader with threatening Odessa school. A 7th grade student at Crockett Middle School was charged Wednesday by Ector County ISD police after he allegedly made a statement about getting a gun and shooting kids, according to a press release from ECISD. The student was charged with exhibition or threat of a firearm after ECISD officers received a call about a statement. The student did not have a weapon, according to the press release. The district stated it will be conducting a threat assessment of the situation to ensure the safety of students and staff moving forward. MISD reports several incidents at Legacy Freshman. Midland ISD reported that several incidents occurred Wednesday morning at Legacy Freshman High School. According to the district, a resource officer responded to a fight in the girls' restroom. Following the fight, the campus was put into hold status for about 20 minutes for a separate adult medical situation. Hold is part of Midland ISD's standard response protocol, and it instructs students and staff to clear the hallways and remain in their room or area until an all clear is announced. Instruction goes on as usual, according to the press release. An LFHS student also pulled the fire alarm and will be facing charges, according to the press release. No fire was reported. MISD police also investigated reports of a gun on campus. No gun was located. Student safety is of the utmost importance to Midland ISD, and we commend our district police, campus staff, and district administration for their swift response and handling of today's incidents at Legacy Freshman, MISD said in a statement. The campus resumed normal operations by 11 a.m.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Tuesday, August 30th, 2022. Education articles. Work ethic, attitude, propel Vasquez to success. By Rebecca Bell. My mother always said to be on time and respect other people's time. Midland College student Vanessa Vasquez said, I've made that a habit for myself. English professor William Christopher Brown confirmed her habit for punctuality. Vanessa has a great work ethic and attitude. She was always one of the first people to arrive to class every day. She grew up in Juarez, Mexico, and graduated from high school in Juarez in 2020 in the midst of the COVID shutdown. As was the case for the class of 2020 throughout the world, she did not have a high school graduation ceremony. In the fall of 2020, she started taking classes at the Universidad de Durango in Juarez, majoring in medicine. My father was working in Midland in the oil field, and we finally were able to join him last summer. Even though I had started college in Mexico, I knew that I would have better opportunities for a career in healthcare in the U.S., so my mother, younger sister, and I moved to Midland. 19-year-old Vanessa is the middle child in her family. This past May, her older sister, Ashley Puola, graduated from medical school in Mexico and is now doing a medical internship at Hospital General de Ciudad Juarez. Her younger sister, 15-year-old Alexandra, attends Midland High School. When Vanessa and Alexandra moved to Midland last summer, it was their first time in the United States. I had studied English for 2 years in high school in Mexico, but I had never really spoken it in conversation or studied in English. I started classes last fall, and I told myself it's time to sink or swim. One of my first Midland College courses was public speaking. Of course, the class was in English, and we had to give speeches in English. I just made up my mind that I was going to do it and do it well. I have to think about what to say and how to write and have to review and review constantly. But I'm proud to say that I'm making good grades and have pretty much mastered the English language on my own. Vasquez is currently enrolled at Midland College as a full-time student and taking prerequisites to enter the associate degree nursing program so that she can train to become a registered nurse. I really like how the professors teach classes at Midland College. For example, I had taken anatomy in college in Juarez, but because of COVID, it was an online course. It is so much better getting to take the class in person with hands-on lab component. It also has been a great opportunity for me to practice my English. I knew anatomy in Spanish, but I've had to learn anatomy in English. I learned the class during the first summer session, so it was fast-paced. We had to cover the entire material in about 5 weeks. That is normally covered in 16 during a regular fall or spring semester. I enjoyed it, and it helped to reinforce that I've made the correct decision in choosing nursing as a profession. Vasquez said that besides anatomy, her other favorite classes have been writing and composition and music appreciation. She said that she enjoys all kinds of good music. In addition to her college studies, she also works approximately 24 hours weekly as a personal shopper at HEB. She works 2 to 9 p.m. 5 days each week. Even though my life is busy, I like living in Midland. It's very peaceful, especially compared to Juarez, which is a very noisy, big city. Juarez is also in the desert. Midland is much greener and has more trees. People laugh when I say how green Midland is, but I think it really is a pretty city. In her spare time, she enjoys playing volleyball, swimming, and cooking, especially desserts. Help area teacher with school supplies at donorschoose.com. Latrice Davis, an AP physics teacher at Early College High School in Midland, made a post on donorschoose.com asking Midlanders for financial assistance in purchasing bodily coding kits for her students. The listing is one of 49 posts made by Midland teachers on the site. DonorsChoose.com is a nonprofit organization that allows people to contribute directly to public school classroom projects around the country. The post was made on July 14th, and the total cost of the project is $934. It expires on November 23rd, and there is still $203 needed for purchase of the educational coding kits. Davis's post is the top listing under the most urgent filter on the website. Most urgent is classified as the submission with the lowest economic cost, highest economic need, and fewest days left to complete. The post states, these bodily kits will build the foundation for learning coding that will help all abilities to start on the road to coding success. The coding kits will reach 50 students high school that allows its attendees to receive an associate's degree at the same time as a high school diploma. Bynum welcomes largest student body by Stuart Doreen. According to Bynum School's fall headcount, the largest group of students in the school's 38-year history arrived for the first day of school. Staff and faculty welcomed a total of 116 new and returning students, an increase of 61 since August 2018, the year Bynum School opened its new campus. Currently, there's a waiting list for pre-kindergarten and high school students. I'm honored and grateful that so many families have chosen Bynum School, said Executive Director Carrie St. John. We know the power of education to transform lives, and we're honored that these families entrust Bynum School with their students' educational future. To keep pace with student growth, Bynum School has also hired several new employees, and there are still openings for qualified teachers and support staff. Since 2018, Bynum School has added 38 positions for a total of 68 employees. Bynum School has a 5-to-1 student-teacher ratio. In order to maintain small class sizes and provide individualized instruction, we need more teachers and support staff. The strong enrollment comes as the school introduces additions to the school week, including daily morning music and prayer, bimonthly chapel time on Wednesdays, and a new curriculum for its pre-kindergarten and high school students. I appreciate the tremendous effort of our faculty and staff have put forward to meet the spiritual, emotional, and academic needs of our students. It is a humbling reminder of our mission. Since 1984, Bynum School has educated students with special needs and unique abilities and backgrounds. We provide an individualized approach that offers support and facilitates attainable opportunities. Every program that Bynum School offers enhances lives and expands the futures of our students and their families. Trinity welcomes students. Students at Trinity School arrived last week to start the 22-23 school year. There was much excitement around campus as students settled into classrooms and greeted new and old friends. The class of 2023 hosted a senior sunrise celebration and met their first grade buddies. The middle and upper school convocation took place to kickstart a great school year, followed by the traditional welcome back handshake processional line. The first college acceptance bell ringing was held with senior Corwin S., class of 23, having already been accepted to Lubbock Christian University. Trinity announces 2022 Hall of Honor inductees. Trinity School announced the 2022 Hall of Honor inductees on Monday. In its seventh year, the Hall recognizes alumni who have brought great honor to Trinity School in their professional careers and in service to their communities. This year's honorees include Kerry Gates Hawkins, class of 06, Will Faudry, 01, Joe DeCompagnier, 75, and Joe Weber, faculty, 1967 to 2022. The honorees will be celebrated at the Hall of Honor dinner and ceremony taking place at Trinity School on October 27th. We're proud of the accomplishments these distinguished alumni have had during their time as students at Trinity School and how they continue to serve their communities as adults, said Kobe Lincoln, School Institutional Advancement Director. In keeping with one of the pillars of our mission, these four individuals embody what it means to inspire servant leadership. Tickets for the event can be purchased at trinitymidland.org/alumni/Hall of Honor. Random audits to test school safety. With kids across the state back in classrooms, the coming weeks we'll see officials from the Texas School Safety Center starting unannounced security audits to test whether intruders can breach schools through unlocked doors. The security audits were announced earlier this summer by Governor Greg Abbott in response to the May mass shooting at Robb Elementary in Uvalde that left 19 children and two teachers dead. Abbott has said that new laws making it more difficult to obtain firearms, such as the military-style rifle used in the Uvalde shooting, are not a real solution to mass shootings. Instead, he is focused on mental health services and school security. Many questioned how the random intruder detection audits would be administered safely and in ways that didn't frighten school children when they begin in September. A Texas School Safety Center spokeswoman responded to a list of questions sent by Hearst newspapers about the scope, timing, and intent of the checks. The audits will run throughout the school year, and every school district in Texas will have at least one campus audited by the end of the 2022 calendar year. More than 1,200 independent school districts in Texas manage thousands of campuses and schools run by the state's charter operators, who also will be subject to the audits. By May 2023, three-quarters of campuses across the state will have been audited. Individual school districts were also instructed this summer to run their own security checks and to convene their safety and security committees to plan ahead of the current school year. This is part of ongoing efforts from the Texas Education Agency at Abbott's direction to strengthen policies around school security. The School Safety Center will communicate to district superintendents and local law enforcement agencies ahead of conducting the audits, telling them they'll occur within a particular month, but not which day. The audits will not be a simulation of an armed intruder. The auditors will be wearing plain clothing and are instructed to self-identify as working with the School Safety Center if stopped and asked by a school employee. Shortly after the audits, if there are problems uncovered, the schools will be given the results directly and asked to remedy the problems. Individual campus and districts' results from the audits won't be made available to the public at all, but aggregate results will be shared throughout the reports in the middle of the school year around January and again at the end of the school year. Back-to-school scramble includes panic buttons. Melissa Lee comforted her son and daughter after a student opened fire in their suburban Kansas City high school, wounding an administrator and a police officer stationed there. Then, weeks later, she wept for the parents in Uvalde who were forced to bury their children after the massacre there in May. She said she was absolutely reassured when she learned her district had since purchased one of the panic alert systems gaining traction nationwide amid a surge in school violence that includes shootings and fights. The technology, featuring wearable panic buttons or mobile phone apps, enables teachers to notify each other and police in the event of an emergency. Time is of the essence, said Lee, whose son helped barricade a classroom door and watched police enter his school with guns drawn. They can hit a button and, okay, we know something's wrong, really wrong, and then it puts everybody else on high alert. Multiple states now mandate or encourage the buttons, and a growing number of districts are shelling out tens of thousands of dollars per school for them, part of a widespread scramble to beat up school security and prevent the next tragedy. The spending spree includes metal detectors, security cameras, vehicle barriers, alarm systems, clear backpacks, bullet-resistant glass, and door-locking systems. Critics say school officials are scrambling to show action, any action, to worried parents ahead of the new school year, but in their haste may be emphasizing the wrong things. It's security theater, said Ken Trump, president of the National School Safety and Security Services. Instead, he said schools should focus on making sure teachers are implementing basic safety protocols, such as ensuring doors aren't propped open. The attack in Uvalde illustrated the shortcomings of panic alert systems. Robb Elementary School had implemented an alert app, and when an attacker approached the school, a school employee did send a lockdown alert. But not all teachers received it because of poor Wi-Fi or phones that were turned off or in a drawer, according to an investigation by Texas legislature. And those who did may not have taken it seriously. The school sent out frequent alerts related to Border Patrol car chases in the area. People want visible, tangible things, Trump said. It's a lot harder to point to the value of training your staff. Those are intangibles. Those are things that are less visible and invisible, but they're most effective. In suburban Kansas City, the decision to spend $2 million over 5 years for a system called Crisis Alert isn't a knee-jerk reaction, said Brent Kiger, Olathe Public Schools Director of Safety Services. He said he's been eyeing the system even before gunfire erupted in the Olathe High School in March, as staff confronted an 18-year-old rumor that he had a gun in his backpack. It helped us kind of evaluate it and look at it through a lens of we've been through this critical incident, and how would it have helped us? And it would have helped us that day, he said. There's just no question about that. The system, a different one than what you've already relied on, allows staff to trigger a lockdown that will be announced with flashing strobe lights, a takeover of staff computers, and a pre-recorded intercom announcement. Teachers can set off the alarms by pushing a button on a wearable badge at least 8 times. Staff can also summon help to break up a hallway fight, or to deal with a medical emergency if they push the button 3 times. Demand for Crisis Alert had been growing even before Uvalde, with revenue from new contracts increasing 270% from the first quarter of 2021 to the first quarter of 2022. Products manager Sintajic said in a statement. Arkansas was an early adoptee of panic buttons, announcing in 2015 that more than 1,000 schools would be equipped with a smartphone app that connects users quickly with 911. At the time, education officials said the plan was the most comprehensive in the nation. But the idea really gained steam after the 2018 mass shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. Lori Al-Hadif, whose 14-year-old daughter Alyssa was among the 17 killed, found the group Make Our Schools Safe and began advocating for panic buttons. She had texted her daughter as shots rang out that help was on the way. But in reality, there was no panic button. There was no immediate way to contact law enforcement or emergency services to get on site as soon as possible, said Lori Kadaki, the group's spokeswoman. We always kind of go by the thinking that time equals life. Lawmakers in Florida and New Jersey responded by passing Elisa's Law, requiring schools to begin using panic alarms. District of Columbia schools also added panic button technology. Former NFL coach to be keynote speaker at Trinity Luncheon in October. Trinity School is pleased to announce this year's Sweetie and Hal Clay Peck Memorial Speaker Series Luncheon will take place October 4th at Midland Country Club. The school welcomes the community to attend. Tickets and tables can be purchased at trinitymidland.org/giving. This year's keynote speaker is university lecturer, former NFL coach and author, and presidential leadership scholar Darren Roberts. Call an Audible was named as number one release, new release, and bestseller by Amazon, and Sports Illustrated selected the book as one of its best sports business books of 2017. Roberts serves as founding director of the Center of Sports Leadership and Innovation at the University of Texas. The center is the first university-based institute dedicated to developing leadership and character curricula for high school, collegiate, and professional athletes. Darren has moderated discussions with Mia Hamm, Lance Armstrong, Sean White, Allie Raisman, Kevin Durant, and Brené Brown. After graduating from Harvard Law School in 2007, Robert served coaching stints with the Kansas City Chiefs, Detroit Lions, West Virginia Mountaineers, and Cleveland Browns. He holds a Bachelor of Arts degree in Plan 2 Honors and Government from the University of Texas and a Master of Public Policy degree from Harvard's Kennedy School. The Presidential Leadership Foundation, a joint venture between the Presidents Bill Clinton and George W. Bush, tabbed Roberts as a Presidential Leadership Scholar in the inaugural class. Byers is Region 18 Teacher of the Year. Young Women's Leadership Academy English teacher Amanda Byers has been named Secondary Teacher of the Year for Region 18. This designates her as the top teacher for secondary students from among 19 counties and 33 school districts in West Texas. She is now in the running for Secondary Teacher of the Year for the state of Texas. She learned of her award during a surprise ceremony Wednesday. Her students, campus administration, and family were on hand to help her celebrate.
Top-rated physicians, facilities. Dear Dr. Roach, I will be needing a surgery invasive procedure soon. I have a top-rated physician, but they are at a low-rated facility. I have another top-rated physician who works through a nationally ranked physician and hospital group. Is it reasonable to say that the choice is clear to go with the top-rated physician who works at a top-rated facility, HC? Answer. I am very cautious about ratings of individual physicians. These ratings may predict a physician's likability, but do not correlate well with a physician's objective abilities and outcomes, nor with peer-reviewed evaluations. There is the potential for conflict of interest. As a physician, imagine that a patient asks you for antibiotics when you know they are not appropriate. Doing the right thing for your patient and your community by not prescribing them would be likely to give you a worse rating. Ratings for institutions can be much more robust, but may still inadequately account for degrees of complication taken by institutions that accept the most challenging medical and surgical patients. Furthermore, a hospital that is well-rated overall might not be so good at the procedure you are getting. Nevertheless, I would still tend to prefer a more higher-rated facility than a lower-rated one. The site I use when asked about rating facilities is www.tinyurl.com/AHRQratings, which gives links to ratings by Medicare, the Joint Commission on Hospital Accreditation, and other respected rating systems.
This is the Dear Abby column. Sexual abuse continues to haunt family members. Dear Abby, 15 years ago, my husband's sister told him their brother Brad had molested her when she was young. She had repressed it until revealing it to a therapist. Brad admitted doing it, but said it was because a parish priest showed him pornography. Brad gave her money to pay for her therapy. My husband has pretty much dismissed it and remains very close to Brad. I have never been able to look at Brad in the same way, and I prefer not to be around him. My husband wants me to pretend it's in the past and let it go, but I'm having trouble doing that. My aversion to Brad has grown more intense over the years. His sister still has issues, and I believe they stem from his abuse. I don't know what to do. Help, please. Signed, Complicated in Illinois. Dear Complicated, it is probable that the priest who showed Brad the pornography sexually abused him, too. Brad has tried to make amends by paying for his sister's therapy. I wonder if he had any himself. I think you should talk to your sister-in-law about this and take your cues from her. Dear Abby, I have a close friend who was diagnosed with skin cancer. She had surgery a few days ago, and she will know within the next 2 weeks if it is gone. I am devastated. I don't know what to do, to say, or how to act. I check in several times a day with her to ask what I can do. We usually talk about everything, but now she's talking about death and dying. My heart is broken, and I tear up when I think about it. I'd like to tell her what I'm feeling and how much I think of her, but I don't know how. Signed, Lost in the East. Dear Lost, if you feel you can't get out what you need to communicate to your friend without breaking down, put it in a letter to her. Take your time writing it, and when you're done, put it aside for a day or so and then reread it before sending or giving it to her. It couldn't do any harm to let her know how much you love and value her, the things you most admire about her, and how important she is, not was, in your life. If she lives decades more, which I sincerely hope, that love letter will be a treasured keepsake. Dear Abby, I am in my late 60s. When I am approached by people who know me, I can't remember them. It's embarrassing to ask them who they are. I may have worked with them or met them somehow, but although they look familiar, I draw a blank. I have spoken to several friends who have the same problem. I sometimes recognize people I haven't seen for a while and have to remind them who I am. What would be the polite way to ask, "Who are you?" Signed, Don't Know in Pennsylvania. Dear Don't Know, a polite way to manage it would be to be honest. Simply say, "Forgive me, but I think I'm having a senior moment." Where do we know each other from? It's effective, and as you stated, you are not the only one. It also happens to people who are younger than you. You can write to Dear Abby at dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.